Chapter 3. Within Palazzo Doria's orange bowers went far to mend these marrings of thy soul subliming powers. But, Queen, such squalid undress none should see, those dream endangering thy wounds no more beware lovers first behold thy form in pilgrimage to thee. Shelley's Skylark, The Neighborhood of Leghorn. March, 1887. Somewhere afield here something lies in earth's oblivious eyeless trust, that moved a poet to prophecies a pinch of unseen, unguarded dust, the dust of the lark that Shelley heard, and made immortal through times to be, though it only lived like another bird, and knew not its immortality. Lived its meek life, then, one day, fell a little ball of feather and bone, and how it perished, when piped farewell, and where it wastes, are alike unknown. Maybe it rests in the loam I view, maybe it throbs in a myrtle's green, maybe it sleeps in the coming hue of a grape on the slopes of yon inland scene. Go find it, Far East, go and find that tiny pinch of priceless dust, and bring a casket silver-lined, and framed of gold that gems encrust. And we will lay it safe there, and consecrate it to endless time, for it inspired a bard, to win ecstatic heights in thought and rhyme. In the old theater, Fiesole, April, 1887, I traced the circus whose gray stones incline, where Rome and Etruria interjoin, till came a child who showed an ancient coin that bore the image of a Constantine. She lightly passed, nor did she once opine how, better than all books, as he had raised for me in swift perspective Europe's history through the vast years of Caesar's sceptered line. For in my distant plot of English loam 'twas but to delve, and straightway there to find coins of like impress. As with one half-blind whom common simples cure, her act flashed home in that mute moment to my opened mind the power, the pride, the reach of perished Rome. Rome. On the Palatine, April, 1887. We walked where Victor Jove was shrined awhile, and passed to Livia's rich red mural show, whence, thridding cave and crypta portico, we gained Caligula's dissolving pile. And each rank ruin tended to beguile the outer sense, and shape itself, as though it wore its marble hues, its pristine glow of scenic frieze and pompous peristyle. When lo, swift hands, on strings nigh overhead, began to melodize a waltz by Strauss. It stirred me as I stood, in Caesar's house, raised the old routes imperial lyres had led, and blended pulsing life with lives long done, till time seemed fiction, past, and present one. Rome building a new street in the ancient quarter, April, 1887. These numbered cliffs and gnarls of masonry out skeleton time's central city, Rome, whereof each arch, entablature, and dome lies bare in all its gaunt anatomy. And cracking frieze and rotten metop express, as though they were an open tome top lined with caustic monitory gnome, dunces, learn here to spell humanity. And yet within these ruins very shade the singing workmen shape and set, and join their frail new mansion's stuccoed cove and coin with no apparent sense that the ears abrade, though each rent wall their feeble works invade once shamed all such in power of peer and groin. Rome, the Vatican, Sala del Muse, 1887. I sat in the Muse's hall at the mid of the day, and it seemed to grow still, and the people to pass away, and the chiseled shapes, to combine in a haze of sun, till beside a Carrara column there gleamed forth one. She was nor this nor that of those beings divine, but each and the whole an essence of all the nine. With tentative foot she neared to my halting place, a pensive smile on her sweet, small, marvelous face. Regarded so long, we render thee sad? Said she. Not you, sighed I, but my own inconstancy. I worship each and each, in the morning one, and then, alas, another at sink of sun. Today my soul clasps form, but where is my troth of yesternight with tune? Can one cleave to both? E not perturbed, said she. Hark apart in fame, as I and my sisters are one, those two are the same. But my loves go further to story, and dance, and him, the lover of all in a sun sweep is fool to whim, is swayed like a river weed as the ripples run. Eh, white, thou swayst not. These are but phases of one, and that one is I, and I am projected from thee, one that out of thy brain and heart thou causest to be extern to thee nothing. Grieve not, nor thyself beckle, woo where thou wilt, and rejoice thou canst love at all. Rome at the Pyramid of Cestius near the graves of Shelley and Keats, 1887. Who, then, was Cestius, and what is he to me? Amid thick thoughts and memories multitudinous, one thought alone brings he. I can recall no word of anything he did. For me he is a man who died, and was interred to leave a pyramid, whose purpose was expressed, not with its first design, nor till, far down in time, beside it found their rest two countrymen of mine. Cestius in life, maybe, slew, breathed out threatening, I know not. This I know. In death all silently he does a kindlier thing, and beckoning pilgrim feet with marble finger hide aware, by shadowy wall and history haunted street, those matchless singers lie. Dot dot, say then, he lived and died that stones which bear his name should mark, through time, where two immortal shades abide, it is an ample fame. Lawson and Gibbon's Old Garden, 1112 p. M.M. June 27, 1897, the 110th anniversary of the completion of the Eklund, and fall at the same hour and place. A spirit seems to pass, formal in pose, but grave and grand withal. He contemplates a volume stout and tall, and far lamps fleck him through the thin acacias. Anon the book is closed, with tea is finished. And at the alley's end he turns, and soon on me his glances bend, and, as from earth, comes speech small, muted, yet composed. How fares the truth now? Ill? Do pens but slyly further her advance? May one not speed her, but in phrase askance? Do scribes aver the comic to be reverent still? Till rule those minds on earth at whom sage Milton's wormwood words were hurled. Truth like a bastard comes into the world never without ill fame to him who gives her birth. Zermatt to the Matterhorn, June-July, 1897. 32 years since, up against the sun, seven shapes, thin atomies to lower sight, laboringly leapt and gained thy gable tight, and four lives paid for what the seven had won. They were the first by whom the deed was done, and when I look at thee, my mind takes flight to that day's tragic feat of manly might, as though, till then, of history thou hadst none. Yet ages ere men topped thee, late and soon thou watchedst each night the planets lift and lower, thou gleamedst to Joshua's pausing sun and moon, and bravedst the tokening sky, when Caesar's power approached its bloody end. Yea, sawst that noon when darkness filled the earth till the ninth hour. The Bridge of Lodi, 2, Spring, 1887. I, when of tender mind and body I was moved by minstrelsy, and that strange Bridge of Lodi brought a strange delight to me. 2, in the battle-breathing jingle of its forward-footing tune I could see the armies mingle, and the columns cleft and hewn. 3, on that far-famed spot by Lodi, where Napoleon clove his way to his fame, when like a god he bent the nations to his sway. IV, hence the tune came capering to me, while I traced the Rhone and Po, nor could Milan's marvel woo me from the spot englimmered so. V, and today, sunlit and smiling, here I stand upon the scene, with its saffron walls, dun tiling, and its meads of maiden green. Vi, even as when the trackway thundered with the charge of grenadiers, and the blood of 40 hundred splashed its parapets and piers. Dot dot, vi, any ancient crone I'd toady. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.